And the interesting thing about this is, you know that tape that's playing in the tape player? Well, talking to the tape player will not change the tape. It's already recorded. You actually have to push the record button to get the tape player to play something different. What's important about that is there's a process by which you can get the record button and change the tape, but it's not talking to the tape player. So while I might become aware of the conscious things in my life, why these events happen in my life, who did what to who, and I tear them all apart, which is an unfortunate situation because even in that kind of therapy, reliving every one of those events in your life actually makes the tape even stronger because you've now personally re-experienced it again and again. So it hurts to go through these processes, and it doesn't necessarily change the outcome because your conscious mind has now become aware of this new information, but your subconscious mind still playing the old tapes. And that just because your conscious mind is aware, there's nobody in the subconscious to talk to. There's nobody there. There's nobody that even reviews the tapes to say that this behavior is good for you or bad for you. The tapes are stimulus response push button tapes, almost exactly the same as the mechanism at the cell membrane. A signal from the environment comes up, pushes the receptor, that engages the effector, which then coordinates the response. That is the subconscious mind. There's nobody in there. There's nobody to talk to. So all of our issues of trying to become aware with our conscious mind, assuming that that's immediately going to change the subconscious mind, is not necessarily so. It's not that it can happen, but its effectiveness is extremely low. So this all of a sudden says we must start to perceive of other ways of influencing and impacting the subconscious mind. Well, interestingly, when I started to arrive at the reality that I do have a subconscious mind, that it was more powerful than me, that in fact, it had beliefs programmed in there that conflicted with the beliefs that I wanted to realize or the intentions I wanted to realize in my life, I realized at some point, I must change these programs. How? I didn't have any real access, and yet I started to recognize one thing, that the thoughts that were running through my mind were really the tape player playing. And if you drive in the car, for example, and you stop at the red light and you start to listen to the thoughts that are running through your head for a second, psychologists will tell you when they analyze these thoughts running through our head, 70% of these thoughts are negative and redundant, meaning that we are actually playing a script of a life that we don't even want to experience. Thoughts like, well, that's not going to work, or this can't happen, or they wouldn't do that. As soon as you start pronouncing these things, you are broadcasting a belief that your mind is actually broadcasting into the environment beliefs that are attached with these thoughts. And as we mentioned before, that through magnetoencephalograph studies, the thoughts that you're having in your head are not contained in your head. They go out into the field and become part of the field. And as we know through quantum mechanics, the field is involved with governing the particle. So all of a sudden, if you really start to listen to most of your thoughts, then you'll understand what the psychologists are telling us. Most of our thoughts are sending out vibrational frequencies that are not going to support us. That these vibrational frequencies usually undermine us and are not really going to contribute to our wants and wishes. And so when I started to listen to that, I started to hear myself and I started to say, wait a minute, every time I could catch myself in a thought that was negative, I would stop and say, cancel that. No, I would then make a positive statement about what I wanted and then let it go. And this was a very busy process because these thoughts are running through your head so many per minute even, so you can catch whatever number you can. I started to recognize by repetition, and it took a long time, that I could start correcting these programs by repeating, and it was a repetition, a habit, of putting in the new program that essentially I began to rewrite the beliefs that were in my subconscious mind. This process is not easy, though, and I found out that actually it represents what we call Buddhist mindfulness. Buddhist mindfulness is not to rely on the tape player for running your life, but to be conscious fully all of the time and make your decisions from your creative mind and not from your habitual mind. Yet, Buddhist mindfulness is a very difficult process to practice in the world that we live in because of the busyness of our world. We are so busy, drawn in our jobs, in our social lives, and in all the community activities that we don't really have the time or the patience to sit there and handle each one of these thoughts as they come up into our mind. So while Buddhist mindfulness is indeed a very powerful way of changing the programs in the subconscious mind, there are other ways to do it as well. One of the other ways to change a program in the subconscious mind is to recognize that, how did we get the programs? And the answer is, while we were in a hypnagogic trance. So understanding that, then it also makes sense why clinical hypnotherapy is one of the contributing ways of rewriting our programs, because hypnotherapists can facilitate our brain getting back into that learning state, which is low alpha and theta, where we can directly download programs into the subconscious and bypass the conscious mind, the same events that occurred in the first 6 years of our lives. Using clinical hypnosis, then, is a very effective way to rewrite the existing program with a different conclusion, meaning the same stimulus comes in, but I now connect it with a different output response. And by doing that, then I'm no longer a victim of the reflex behavior of signal in, stimulus out. I can rewrite the stimulus. It's very important to recognize that the rewriting is a requirement. Some people think, well, I'm just not going to pay attention to that. Well, the fact is, you may not pay attention to something with your conscious mind, but your subconscious mind is always 100% of the time responding to whatever stimuli are out there and engaging in the behavior, whether the conscious mind wants to pay attention or not. Again, the conscious mind is operating the system for a very small percentage of the time. Lastly, there's a new field of psychology called energy psychology. There's a whole variety of different modalities that constitute what is called energy psychology. The one I'm most familiar with is a process called Psych-K, which stands for psychological kinesiology. But there are others called body talk, avatar, EFT, TFT, EMDR. I can go on listing all of these different versions of them, but all of them are pretty much the same in this regard. That they're more of a quantum mechanical approach to changing consciousness than the physical approach that Newtonian biologists would like to encourage, which is working with the physical machine, giving it drugs and chemicals and take these pills and that's how you fix yourself. Quantum mechanics employs energy fields, which are more powerful than chemical fields. So energy psychology is basically a way of identifying belief programs that we have in our subconscious mind and using situations that are similar to super learning techniques. You have an option to rewrite the programs very quickly in the subconscious mind. In fact, sometimes these processes take less than 5 minutes, maybe 5 to 10 minutes, and you can rewrite a belief that has completely affected your whole life in 5 minutes or so. And then this is part of this new energy psychology. Again, it's a different form of psychology. It's based on recognizing that the two minds are separate from each other and that the subconscious mind is the more powerful one, and it's just the one that works as a tape player and not as a creative consultant to your life. It's just playing programs. So as we start to do this, we can change the patterns that are emanating from the thoughts that we have in our head. And that, why this becomes very important is because the thoughts in our head actually go in two directions. Thoughts in our head go into our body and influence the physiology and biology and genetic activity of the cells in our body. But the thoughts from our head also go out into the field and become part of a field of information that is outside of our body. That this field of information outside of the body is greatly influential on people caught in the field. Now, there are people like Rupert Sheldrake that talk about these fields, calling them morphic fields or morphogenic fields, where thoughts are ideas, energy fields, and as energy fields, and then link it with the Einstein notion of the field governing the particle, then you can realize how thought fields, when enough people are thinking them, can change the physical reality of the planet that we're living on. It's actually the nature of mass events. You can't have a war unless you get at least a minimum number of people agreeing and thinking and processing a field that says war is inevitable, then something like that can happen. That a pacifist, for example, could be in a soccer game, you know, those kind of games that explode and all of a sudden the crowds go crazy. And it's interesting because although the pacifist is consciously totally locked into being a pacifist, when engaged in a mass crowd response such as a riot breaking out, they unavoidably find themselves with with a chair in their hand clubbing somebody over the head. And it turns out the field is very, very powerful in controlling who we are. And that the field is contributed by the thoughts of so many people in the field. And the more people with a uniform thought, the more that field can empower and control us. All of this has very profound interest in this regard. When I was raised, as I said, I really sought science and not religion and spirituality because of what I saw, the hypocrisy in those fields. And so basically, I didn't get any training, especially in Christian religion. And yet, when I started to come to the reality of how my thoughts were influencing my biology, I started to reflect on some of the teachings of Jesus, and I found, my goodness, the guy was saying exactly the same thing that I ended up saying. That basically, it goes like this. When he wanted to heal somebody, or somebody came for healing, the first question he asked them, do you believe you can get healed? What he really required was that their belief was required. Their perception that they could get healed was required in order for them to get healed. That if they didn't have that perception, then he was not about to really try a healing, because he already saw that if they didn't believe they can get healed, then there was not going to really be an influence by that. He also went on to say this other interesting, often repeated statement that says, all the things that I can do, you can do them even better than I can, but you don't believe you can. And why this becomes interesting is because all the miracles he's talking about really said that everyone can do this, but their perceptions don't allow them to do that. He didn't ask people to change. He just asked them to change their beliefs. And why that's interesting is walking across hot coals and possibly walking across water are all really much connected to the very same concept and notion of beliefs, what we believe we can do and what we believe we can't do. And then here comes the last part that ties all this together, especially with the last information on the field effect. And it goes like this. Again, not being a Bible scholar, so please excuse my paraphrasing of this biblical information, but Jesus said essentially, I can't do miracles in my own hometown. I have to leave town to do miracles. And the reason why was that the people in his own hometown knew who he was. He was the carpenter's son. You know, who is he? He's just a guy. He can't do miracles. They didn't believe he can do miracles. What was relevant was when they didn't believe he could do miracles, he couldn't do miracles. That's why when he left and went to other parts where people didn't know him or they heard of him as the miracle maker, when he came to town, miracles were a lot easier because people were anticipating and expecting them. That was their belief system. So what's really interesting is, while I'm not into the religion, I certainly do go back and understand the nature of these belief systems that deal with how our thoughts and how our perceptions actually shape the reality that we have. How the limitations of our lives are really more or less programs that we acquired from other people, cutting the tall poppy in many cases, bringing us down to being average and therefore not expressing all the great powers that we have. And so that we really have to start taking an unfortunate situation, because here's where I'm going to have to put in the result. And the result is taking personal responsibility for everything in your life. Now, this is really hard. I used to close my lectures with, when you understand the nature of this new biology, you fully understand the nature of the fact that we are responsible in our perceptions for all the things that happen in our lives. Well, people don't want to hear that because their entire lives, of course, they've been told that they've been victims. So to be turning around and all of a sudden that I'm responsible for all those things in my life, the events, the illnesses, and all the other things that are traumas that I'm responsible, people find that very difficult. And I used to close, as I said, the lecture and then realize at some point, but this is really not a good way to leave them, because now they're mad at me after giving this lecture. And I thought, okay, we got to think about this. But really, it was forced to come up with a different conclusion once when I closed my lecture with that understanding, and a woman came in with her husband after the lecture. She was totally distraught, emotionally broken by the fact that she was trying to really say, how can I own these things in my life? Apparently, she was not real happy with the things in her life and was even less happy to consider that she was responsible for them, and she wanted me to give her a different conclusion. She wasn't going to accept that. So I mulled it over, and they were there, and I was trying to think, well, I can't change the conclusion. That is the conclusion. I was thinking, well, how can I say this? And all of a sudden it came on me and I said it this way. It goes like this. You are personally responsible for everything in your life once you become aware that you are personally responsible for everything in your life. And this is why this new science is very important for us. Because our lack of responsibility, our lack of recognizing how powerful we are in controlling our lives and controlling what happens in our world, has led us onto this path that we are facing extinction, that the world is falling apart. We're in crises of all kinds. We're in health crises. That is actually financially destroying us as a nation. The fears that we're experiencing are enhancing the health crisis. Interestingly, why? Because fear causes protection, which shuts down growth in the immune system, and so that we're in this escalating cycle of fear and ill health, fear and ill health. We're destroying the environment. All of this is really a wake-up call. It is up to us as individuals to finally own who we are, that we bought into the belief of victimization. We bought into, I'm just a genetic automaton. Biochemicals run me. I have nothing to do with it. We bought that, and in so doing, gave up responsibility for what happened in our lives. But the new story, the new science of epigenetics, the new science of quantum mechanics that recognizes the invisible fields and thoughts and energies as contributing to our reality, changed that old view. No longer are we victims of genes. We are masters of the genes. We control the genes. We control our life. Our thoughts are real. They're tangible. They influence our physiology. We must own these things because this is the nature of science. And until we do that, we're going to continuously go deeper into the crisis. But I really feel that it's really exciting because now that science has finally grabbed on to the fact that epigenetics is out there, that science and the physicists and people including Stephen Hawking, as of late, as I mentioned, are now beginning to own that the universe is a mental construct, that knowing these things, we become empowered. All we have to do, though, is be careful of the programs, because the programs in our subconscious mind are running the show. And if we do not have programs that support where we want to go, then the statistics will reveal where you're going to go. The subconscious mind, a million times more powerful, working 95 to 99% of the time, is usually where your life is bound. And what's really interesting is, must we go back and identify how the programming occurred? And the answer is absolutely not. And the reason is simply this. The subconscious mind is always in present tense. It doesn't have a future, it doesn't have a past. The subconscious mind is handling the present tense all of the time. If I learned something when I was 6 years old, that perception is operating right now, not as a six-year-old perception, but as a current perception of the way I see my life. So the reality is that in order for us to change this, we have to identify these programs. But we've also been led by a belief that to understand the nature of the programs, we have to go back and identify who were the people that brought us the lessons that we learned that became our programs, and what were the lessons. And the interesting fact is that is totally a waste of time for this reason. The people who brought us the lessons were the messengers. What we learned was the message. Well, we have spent many years in psychology going back and killing the messenger over the message. It doesn't change the message. What's the message? It's not relevant who taught you the message. You're carrying the message right now. What is the message? And here's the beautiful part. The programs in your subconscious mind are printed out as the life you are experiencing. So what you have to do is really just look at the life you have, and the things that you want to change, the things that you strive for and don't work, generally reflect that you have a program that will not allow you to get there. And so you don't have to go back and find out who gave you that program. It's already hitting you in the face that you can rewrite these, and that you can rewrite them using any of the varieties of ways of impacting that subconscious mind, from Buddhist mindfulness to clinical hypnotherapy to energy psychology. These are available to us. That until we do that, we actually are victims of the subconscious mind, not victims of the world, victims of our own belief systems. That when we clear these pathways, we become empowered. Then, and only then, will we likely experience what Jesus said when he said, you could do all these miracles even better than I can once you believe you can. And this is really the wonderful part, because For me as a biologist, I initially started this understanding through my research on cells. And when I went out to my first audiences after that epiphany I had in the Caribbean, I couldn't wait to tell people. I'd get out there and say, I gotta tell you about this new biology. It's so great. You can create this wonderful life when you understand how it works. And in my original lectures, I realized most of the audience at some point would cock their heads and look at me and strangely and sort of say, you know, for a guy who apparently knows something, your life doesn't look that good. And then there was a point where I really almost said, and I'm glad I didn't, but it was just about the same. I would say, well, do as I say, not as I do. But when I heard myself say that, I realized, wait a minute. I can't talk about this stuff if I don't go out and try it myself. That's not even good science. So I realized at some point that although I had left my mainstream science background, that I realized I couldn't go forward. And I actually made a personal commitment to myself and said, listen, Bruce, until you go out there and actually demonstrate if any of this is real, I really don't think you should lecture on this stuff. And so I immediately had to get into the status of what can I do to change my behavior with my knowledge at this point. And the beautiful part was once I started to make an active process of rewriting the programs, my life changed on a dime. It changed so fast that I actually didn't miss a beat. I didn't even miss a lecture. I was back on the lecture track this time with much more positive understanding about the fact that, okay, it's not just words, it actually works. And why I really want you to get to know this was that I had all the awareness of the mechanisms in my conscious mind, but I was still operating my life for my subconscious mind. And the same thing applies to all of us. For anybody who's listening to all this information, what I'm telling you is simply this. The information that is included in all this material is information to make you free and very powerful. It's available to you to create the life that you really want. But you must recognize something that even I had to recognize. It wasn't just getting the awareness. It was applying the awareness into my life. It was the application that made the change. It wasn't just because I got downloaded with this information that I was anybody different. I was exactly the same as I was before. So my caveat about this, when you understand this information, get a chance to review it and look at it, how it applies to your life, is that indeed you are totally powerful people. But it's not going to happen just by thinking about it. I may have a program that says maybe I can't be a pilot in my subconscious mind. Maybe I learned that from some parent teaching or something that I realize I'm not good enough or not capable of flying a plane. And then I say, okay, let's rewrite that program. And okay, now I've changed my belief. I can fly a plane. I really now believe I can fly a plane. But I suggest that you do not get into a plane with me until I take flying lessons. And the reality is this. While the mind can lead you there, you actually have to do something to make it work. So these wonderful new ideas are tools. But until you use the tools, they're just ideas. And yet, I can tell you from my experience now, having traveled around this country and other countries for now almost 20 years giving these lectures and interacting with people who have undergone processes like the Psyche process and watching them change their belief systems, getting the feedback from hundreds and hundreds of people who have taken this information and then applied it into their lives and have profoundly changed their lives has been one of the most gratifying experiences of my entire life. I would like you to experience that, but I just want you to remember this caveat. Just conscious information alone doesn't change things in your life. What you really have to do is go back into that subconscious and reprogram them. Reprogram the programs that you may not have any consciousness about, because remember, much of the programming occurred before we were 6 years of age. So I wouldn't even expect you to have a conscious awareness of what these programs are. But as I said, going back is not relevant. The current moment of your life is all you have to look at to see what's working and what's not working. The things that are not working reflect programs that are not supporting you. And they can be rewritten, and you can be as powerful as Jesus said and do the miracles he said. And I really look forward to that, because we are in a desperate race of time to change who we are and what we are so we can bring the planet back, bring the environment back, bring back the opportunity for our survival. Because when we really learn the truth, We are all cells in a larger organism called humanity. And when we get that belief in, we'll start supporting each other instead of killing each other. And our future is in recognizing we are far greater than ourselves as individuals.
This concludes Session 5 of The Wisdom of Your Cells. Our program continues with Session 6, The Future of Human Evolution, with Dr. Bruce Lipton.